Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon on Coffee Talk Radio, a part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project. If you'd like to join our team, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Be the media. So it's chilly here in the little house in the big woods in the foothill of the Oregon Coast Range. And it's a little lonely, too, because co-pilot Debbie Lynn Molyneux can't be with us today. No worries. I think we can do this, you and I. I'm also going to apologize in advance if I cough before I can mute myself. I caught some darn virus on my way home from Colorado, and I can't seem to shake it. So I guess that's just how it is when you get old. Baby boomers rock, but we get cold. I'm ready to go, though, because our topic today is the battle at the ballot box. Funny enough, I named the show three times and managed to put two of the three in my email blast, but this is really the name. And by the time we're done, I think you'll get why. As it turns out, this is going to be part one of this conversation, and part two will be on Press One for Democracy on Monday, right here on Coffee Talk Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern, sitting in with Marianne Castiglia, sitting in for Dan Aronson, and her guest, Charlotte Von Coyle. It's a big issue, and we get to start the conversation here today. Battle at the ballot box is a phrase I'm stealing from Reverend Barber in the North Carolina NAACP Moral Monday movement. They have been celebrating since yesterday after the appeals court ruling that two provisions of the new voter suppression law, the provision eliminating same-day registration and the provision calling for a voter's ballot to be thrown away if they vote in the wrong precinct, will be suspended pending a full trial on the full case in its merits. To quote the story from Think Progress that's posted on Lunch with Loudon Facebook page today, quote, "Victory for voting rights, but it's only a partial victory. For one thing, the court only blocked part of the North Carolina law. Provisions reducing the number of early voting days, eliminating pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds, and a slow rollout of a voter ID law that takes full effect in 2016 were all left intact, as were others," unquote. And I can take a second here and put this link in chat for those of you that are following along. It's a little harder for me when Debbie Lynn isn't here. It's great when one of us is on chat and one of us is on the phone, but hey. So in summary, in North Carolina, they're happy, but ID is delayed. Same-day registration was saved. Early voting days were cut back, and early registration of kids still in high school was out. Early registration was an exercise in civil engagement while kids were still in the classroom. And I think it was a brilliant idea, I think, to help launch good citizens into the adult world. Sounds really good to me, actually. That's gone. And early voting days, of course, was the answer to lines so long that voting became an endurance sport, kind of like marathoning. Who thinks that's a good idea, making voting, you know, so difficult? Well, let's get right to it. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, thinks that it makes perfect sense to make it difficult to exercise our civil rights and civic duty to vote. They've been at that since 2008. They worked hard to shift state legislatures towards candidates that agreed with them way back then, and it worked. To quote alexexposed.org, a project of the Center for Media and Democracy, also posted on Facebook at Lunch with Loudon. Since the 2010 elections, quote, a total of 37 states saw strict voter ID laws introduced in 2011 and 2012. Many of those proposals contain elements of the ALEC Model Voter ID Act, which imposes new burdens on the right to vote by requiring voters show state-issued ID cards that approximately 11% of voting-age American citizens do not possess. That number is even higher for students, African-Americans, low-income, and older citizens. I'm going to break the quotes right here and put in, add to this the fact that women who have changed their names make the, you know, there are millions of people who have changed their names and therefore do not have legitimate state ID under this law. Okay, going back to the end quote. Though the ALEC model provides for free ID cards, the Brennan Center for Justice has found that the process of obtaining an ID presents significant difficulties with voters lacking access to transportation, living dozens of miles from the nearest ID issuing office, many of which have irregular and limited hours. I can tell you that's true on Big Island, and facing costs and headaches in obtaining supporting documentation like birth certificates, unquote. I've got a story from one of my first shows 2 years ago that I'll share with you later about just what this looks like, what these barriers to ID can look like. If this just sounds like a lot of, if you cannot convince the majority, redefine the majority, I think you're right on. Because it's certainly what the Carolina victory in the court, still in the shadow of mischief, serious mischief. I'm sure you remember this, just the day before, when voter information, I'm going to put that one in quotes too, went out to over 2,000 people. It was inaccurate in just about every way, including the last day to register. The mailer came from the Americans for Prosperity. They are co-funded. And supposedly, these folks are experts on everything political, but they proved that they were not experts in North Carolina election law. They blew it big. They say they're sorry, but how do you unring that bell? 2,000 people received information that was wrong, false. So, you've heard enough from me. I think we can get started. I've got a whole box and basket full of experience and literature, and but I'm really interested in how is this working out for you. Call in at 646-929-2495 to share your ideas about voter empowerment, about voter suppression, about how voter participation is going in your state. Most of all, what is your experience as a voter? And what do you think of not only current events, but the strategies in place both to protect our civil rights and civic duty to vote and to make it more difficult? Remember, don't forget to raise your hand if you have a comment. I have callers, but I see no hands, and I see one now. Thank you. I'm opening area code 620. Welcome to Lynch with Loudon. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Okay, this is Jack Golding. You hear me?
Hey, Jack. I can.
Yeah. Okay, just moved back into Kansas from Oklahoma, I may be in danger of not being able to vote this election, at least at the local level, because I want to vote Cobos. Now, he's the Secretary of State. Now,
yes.
He wants to cut out, insist upon people having birth certificates.
Yes.
And I don't have my birth certificate with me. I have to go to send to it from Chicago. Maybe that's where I was born.
Then you might be able to get it, order it over the internet, but isn't that interesting? So, Jack, how old are you?
I'm 83.
I think your situation is not uncommon, that there's a point at which things like, you know, your original Social Security card or your birth certificate or, you know, some of these interesting
data. Well, I got my Social
data.
Security card. I had that from age 15.
Right, but some people still
thing
have
is,
original,
the thing
I
is,
sure don't.
The thing is, I have to, well, I hope I can get by it. Be able to vote. I don't want to necessarily vote on the 4th of November, maybe a little ahead of time. Advance voting. And,
well, Jack, I have a link. I'm going to put it in chat now. But it's basically the election. Today is October 2nd, and the election is November 4th. And so in all 50 states, it's still more than 30 days to the election. So you should be able to register today, tomorrow, maybe even Monday. And so I'm putting the link in chat to show where you go to find out what the when the last day to register is in all 50 states. Well, actually, in any state that can vote. I guess District Columbia
yeah,
or others.
Yeah, this is 30-day, okay.
So if
thing
you register
is,
today or tomorrow, you can still do it.
Okay. Kansas, how you say, is a key element of if the election is going to go to get the Senate. Now, I understand that Orman, now he's a guy after my heart. He's an independent, and he's running ahead of Roberts in Kansas. And, okay, I understand that Brownback is in trouble, governor. And...
Yes.
Also, Koboth may be in trouble.
Well, and I think it's really important for someone like you, who obviously schools yourself on the issues, whether you and I would agree or not, I think it's very important for you to register to vote. And so I think that it's interesting that you're finding yourself without reciprocity. In other words, obviously every time you move, you re-register. But this is one of the issues, isn't it? Now in Oregon, if you moved, you know, 2 days before the election, you can go down to the courthouse and you can register to vote because you moved, right? You have to show that you moved. But
I had a friend of mine, okay, that's another thing is Obamacare. She just got... Her California Medi-Cal.
Uh-huh.
Now in Kansas, you gotta have my income is too high to be eligible for Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So another thing, I had to pay $8,000 for. Being in a retirement home for a little over 2 months.
So, are there candidates or issues that's gonna affect how you vote for them? Yeah, I'm coming back to this voting thing, Jack, because I'm really interested in you.
Well, welcome back.
I
hope you can visit me.
Well, I suppose, you know, this is probably a good time in any to start injecting the fact that one of the commitments that the board of directors made at our retreat is that
I will be joining shortly.
Excellent.
I will be joining Coffee Party shortly.
Thank you so much, Jack, and thanks for calling as always. So, you know, Jack is in an unusual situation. It's pretty common, actually, that when someone needs to produce a birth certificate and they're, you know, his age or my age even, that you don't have it. And my first direct experience, this actually was a vicarious experience, was when I first did this show a couple years ago. Eric Beiler was still partnering with me, sort of get my feet off the ground. And we were doing a show on the voter registration then, because it was hot, hot, new issue in many states. And this man named Chris called in, and he was a disabled veteran, is a disabled veteran who cannot drive. Disability prevents him from driving. He cannot afford, on his fixed income, which was disability and some little military pension, I believe, he couldn't afford the time, the bus fare, or the cost of a birth certificate. So even though the identification was going to be free, it's not free in terms of the level of effort it would take for somebody in a wheelchair to get on a city bus, go, you know, an hour and a half, changing buses, get to the place where you can apply for your ID, or actually he said to apply for a birth certificate, and then go through the whole process again when the birth certificate came and tried to get your ID. And this is a guy, I mean, they wouldn't take his BA ID, which apparently has a picture on it. This is, you know, gives him access to federal facilities, and that wasn't okay. And so on his fixed income, that, you know, $25 for the birth certificate plus the bus fare and whatever, made it so like either I'm going to buy prescriptions, I'm going to buy food, or I'm going to buy a birth certificate. This is a guy who had voted in every election since he was 18. He is a Vietnam veteran, and he's turned out to be, we found out later in the conversation, the great-grandson of Harriet Tubman. I mean, he took his civil responsibility very, very seriously. And the way this law is structured to go into effect, folks like Chris will be eliminated. And so unless you do a lot of making it a lot easier to get a birth certificate or finding ways around the birth certificate, I think that's going to be problematic for a lot of people. I know it is. And in states where it's gone into effect, it's very disenfranchising. So I see lots of you out there listening on the telephone. If you'd like to share your experience with voter registration, with showing up to the wrong precinct, with provisional ballots, all these things that we can talk about today, just press one, and a British lady will put you in the queue, put you in the queue to speak. Let's see. So another, I guess I'm a little concerned that, you know, another thing that I'd love to hear people's opinion about is, what do you think about sending out misinformation? I think that it's a very, very, very big deal to be telling people that, you know, this is the wrong last day to register. But also, remember, this is shades of last year. Last year, it was people were told a different, the wrong voting day. People were told, I mean, the misinformation campaign that causes confusion and cynicism, frankly. The cynicism about voting is a huge deal to me. And I think it is, when I talk to my children and my children's children, and we talk about what we think is power or the purpose of voting, I get a lot of cynicism. They feel like it's almost street wisdom that your vote doesn't count, and that even if you show up, you don't know that they're going to count it, and even if that it's kind of a savvy sort of cynicism that may or may not be true, but certainly is disempowering to the democratic process. If it is true, if the things that my kids say, if it turns out to be true, and I know some of you think it might be true, then what do we do about it? You know, one of the things you do is you try to elect people who feel the way you do, whether it's about voter ID, whether it's about campaign finance, Wall Street, you know, banking, you name it. You look for those people and you vote for them. You also look for those people and you work for their campaigns. You look for those people and you contribute to their campaign costs. Fewer than, what was it? Well, it's way less than 1% of the people in the United States. Like it's like one-tenth of 1% of people in the United States actually give more than $200 a year or a campaign season to candidates. And when you imagine that on one end of that spectrum are, you know, multimillionaires and billionaires, and then there's me and my $200, you know, divvied out religiously between every candidate I'm going to vote for, I think that that's a crime. That so few people meaningfully contribute to the election of our folks in office. So there's any wonder, you guys, is there any wonder that they've listened to their campaign funders and not their voters when the chips are down? So I see, again, we have listeners and no hands up, so I'm tempted to open up your line and say, hey, what's important to you about this? But I will say this. Today you can register to vote. Tomorrow you can register to vote. Come around Monday or so, it's whether or not you can still register to vote depends upon where you live. There are states that have the deadline 30 days before an election. There are states that have the deadline 29 days before election. Now, North Carolina, they just won the ability to have same-day registration. But that's not true everywhere. And so I posted in chat and posted on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page where you go if you want to find out, if you don't know yet, where what the cutoff date for registration for voting is. And maybe when you go register to vote, you can take your friends, because I think it's important. Obviously, I think it's important that we're doing this show. So, in the end, what difference does it make? And maybe that's what people want to see. I posted about this show today on the Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page. And there were a lot of interesting answers to the notion or to the question, does it make any difference? And I'm wondering what you think, does it make any difference? Or if not this, then what? Because certainly in Hong Kong right now, there are tens of thousands of people in the streets protesting. They didn't have their right to vote taken away from them, but they had their right candidates taken away from them. That they learned that in the 2016 election, all the candidates would be provided, I guess whatever that means, provided by the state. And I think that that's an interesting slippery slope. So what good would it, I mean, sincerely, what good would it do to vote when you had no choice? And that's what all of these people, certainly in, you know, certainly in the streets, blocking the streets in Hong Kong, believe. And I'm watching them closely. I admire them greatly. And so if you have an opinion or would like to share about that, that would be a great thing to talk about too. But the image I used today for this show is a it's just words. It's, I guess they call them memes these days. I would call it a graphic meme old. And it says, if our vote didn't matter, no one would work so hard to keep us from voting. And to me, that's one of the single pieces of logic that has me hold on to the idea that no matter how crummy it seems, no matter how creepy the TV ads are, no matter how sometimes disgusted with my choices I may feel, the alternative is worse. The alternative, the not being able, not having any chance, folks, of this runaway bike that we call American politics today, it would just devastate me to think that there's nothing more. One of the comments on the page was, if voting didn't matter, billionaires wouldn't be spending millions to buy politicians and judges to keep the people from voting. That would be an example of what we call, being beholden to your campaign funders. I think that's what this guy's referring to in terms of buying politicians. Being beholden to your campaign funders instead of those people who elected you. I think the same thing is true. It's easy to say if you don't like candidates, go run for office, but it's actually important to think that if you don't like candidates, go run for office. Or if you don't like candidates, become involved. I am not a Democrat. I am not a Republican. I obviously end up voting for a lot of people who are not from my party because I believe in voting. And even if it's just sending a message, 100,000 of us feel this way, or a million of us feel this way, or 100 million of us feel this way. Key to the process. And so what would happen if we didn't vote? What happens when we don't vote? Do we... I can't think of a time. I'm trying to be very serious about this. I cannot think of a time in my life where turnout was high and I was upset with the outcome. Now, I think that, it's not always our... I think that that's true. And certainly the whole ALEC conversation about voter registration, voter ID, what we call voter suppression, what they call voter fraud, anti-voter fraud maneuvers. Words are everything, right? So that started after there was a huge outpouring or participation in voters in 2008. And I don't see pickpockets on the street because I'm not a pickpocket and I don't know what to look at for pickpockets. And I don't think like an arsonist, so I don't know what it looks like when someone's like trying to set a fire in a building. And so I don't think like if the majority won't go my way, then I'm going to redefine the majority, right? I don't think that way. And so I give people the benefit of the doubt, and I'm thinking to myself, why? If not in order to control the outcome of an election, why would anybody do this? Why in the face of all statistical research from what I would call unbiased sources that voter fraud is not a reality? Why? Matter of fact, I was just trying to read the statistics from my own state because I thought, how can I speak from experience? Because frankly, the only voter fraud or the most recent voter fraud that was news in our state is that in the last presidential election, if a ballot came in, was being counted, and there was no vote for president, this person who worked at the county at the courthouse was filling in a vote for them. Seriously. So that's voter fraud of an interesting ilk that none of this ID would have prevented. And this person was caught, and they determined that the outcome from the precinct wasn't affected by what she did, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think everybody wants to go back to the old voting machine notion and, pulling the handle for all one party or dead people voting. But you guys, today, it's just not true. It's more possible that you could vote, but what you cast your vote for wasn't what your electronic voting machine said you cast your vote for. And we learned that both in the by the two presidents who were elected and did not serve, Mr. Gore and Mr. Kerry, that the mischief in the electronics is a big, big deal. So here I am. I live in Oregon. In Oregon, we vote by mail. And it's one of only two states that do vote by mail. We've been doing it for a long, long time now. We get our ballots. Well, we get a pamphlet 3 weeks before the election, and a couple days later, your ballot comes. So cool thing number one about this system is that if you've been, quote, unquote, disenfranchised by something like, okay, in Florida, the infamous Florida situation where they purge the voting register ahead of time, and there's all kinds of mistakes, your name and the name of some convicted felon are the same or pretty close to the same. And so if for some reason my name had been purged, I would know because I would not receive a ballot in the mail at least 10 days, 2 weeks before the election. And so if you don't get a ballot in the mail, you go down to your county courthouse and you, you know, make your case, hey, where's my ballot? And they can issue you one on the spot. The system's very tight. One of the things people worry about in my community is, you know, of a greater community of 50,000 people, half of them are students, right? Oregon State University is here. Most students are old enough to vote. There's a few Doogie Howsers out there, but in general, they're 18 or older. And that's so people worry, oh, they'll get a ballot here in Corvallis, and they'll get a ballot back home wherever they live, and they'll be double dipping. Well, apparently, in the voodoo of modern technology, that doesn't happen. And so people have tried to vote more than once because they had more than one address, and they catch them. It's a self-correcting system. The other thing that people worry about, one of the complaints about mail-in voting that I think is hysterical, is they say there are people who say it's just not the same when you have donuts and orange juice with your neighbors. And that might be true in a rural community, semi-rural community like mine. It's certainly true, or my sister lives in Big Island. But when we see the images of people who are literally in lines longer than anything you would find at Disneyland and are in those lines for 8 and 10 and 12 hours in order to vote, I think this whole civic rubbing of shoulders is kind of a, I don't know, it's trying to, instead of, it's really kind of Orwellian, but they're trying to make it sound kind of, you know, like the cover of the Saturday Evening Post, you know. I mean, it's just, it's sort of nice to say, but it's just not true. You might wish it was true, but it's just not true. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that happens here in Oregon is people have block parties or they have big meetings at their churches or synagogues or mosques, and they, maybe your neighborhood association, and people actually get together with their ballots and talk about it. And I think that's amazing. Sometimes I just don't know. And my practice is if I don't understand something, I vote no. And so I've certainly taken advantage of the possibility of talking to people who might know more about forestry or wildland management. Or, I mean, we have a referendum system here in Oregon, so we have lots of time or lots of ballot measures, never, way too many ballot measures as far as I'm concerned. And then I think one of the biggest criticisms from people who don't live in a mail-in ballot state is that, oh my gosh, voter fraud. As I just shared, our biggest case of voter fraud had to do with someone who actually was counting votes, not someone who was casting it. And let's see, I think the statistic is here since 2000. I'm quoting the Christian Science Monitor now. Since the year 2000, 15 million ballots have been cast by mail in Oregon, but there have only been 9 convictions of voter fraud. The measures to ensure that ballots are secure, each envelope has a unique barcode, election officials verify every signature, and there are cameras in every election office to monitor the counting. That's thanks to our friend up in Clackamas County and her need to fill in a presidential candidate. And then you can also check online to know whether or not your ballot has been counted, because remember that the vote itself is not electronic. You know, it's just like back how we used the tape test. You know, with the little your number two pencil filling in the little circle. But everything about it, everything else about it, is electronic. You know, so how your address is selected and how it is mailed, and this is unforwarded mail. So they've actually, it's kind of groovy for those of you that are thinking about mail-in elections who haven't gone that way yet. Oregon is like a broken trail here, found out how to do it well. And frankly, with a lot of elegance, the end point, the purpose for my going on about this system, is that it's kind of absolutely the other end of the spectrum for what we're hearing about these voter ID laws. My signature is my identification. When I mail this thing in, it is my signature that matters. And interestingly enough, that's how it was in the whole country until not that long ago. You might have shown ID when you first registered. In the case of my caller, who was a Vietnam veteran, disabled veteran, he showed his ID, I'm sure, when he was 18. But after that, it was his signature. And frankly, even if they check your ID, when you write a check at the store, bank gets to decide if that's your signature. Even if you've checked ID, and this is the thing that just missed me altogether when people talk about, oh, I need an ID for everything. What difference does it make? Well, you know what? The bank doesn't go by what the teller saw on your driver's license or on your ID card. The bank goes by your signature. And so I either these folks in the voter ID thing think banks don't know what they're doing, right? Or they're sort of missing the point here of what it is to be identified and how many times you have to produce identification and how many ways you have to, or what lengths one must go to re-identify themselves and re-identify themselves and re-identify themselves. And so I'm all about the signature. For goodness sakes, we have a big party and say, look at all those people in Iraq who've got dye on their finger. What? That's okay. That's okay. That's okay. I'll stick my finger in ink. That'll work for me, but I mail mine in, so I'd have to, maybe they do my fingerprints, because that was my fingerprints. Okay, I'm being silly now. Appreciate all the people I see in chat, and I appreciate all the people I see in listening to you. And apparently, I have not ruffled enough feathers to have you actually push one. So I'll make a few more points, and then if this is a listening instead of a conversation, that's great for me. We just may move on from there. So here's another philosophical rub for me, and that is this. If you were to disagree with me and say it takes more than a signature, and if you really believe that a state-issued ID was the cat's meow and made you feel comfortable, then wouldn't you go to great lengths to ensure that everybody had what they needed to get that ID, or that everybody got that ID, no matter what it took? I'm not quite sure why that's a missing piece there. In other words, I really want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I'm really not kidding when I say that. It's not rhetoric. So why is there not a two-year program or a five-year program to get everybody to the point where they could even obtain such an ID, or get, you know, why are we kind of on our own? Why are we kind of thrown to the dogs, so to speak, in terms of, well, however, you know, you do what you have to do to get your ID, because I got mine, I don't know. As opposed to, okay, this is just the next level, we're going to the next level. Now, let's all go there together. What do you need? What do you need? Do we need to create free access for birth? Do we need to create free access or handicap access to, why not have people go to my friend Chris's house because he's immobile, and work with him to get his ID? Seriously. And interestingly enough, another thing that happens is contrary to that is the whole notion. Remember, even the League of Women Voters stopped registering people last year because there were such tight restrictions on even what it took to register people. So, I guess today I may be the only person that's really hot about this. And one thing you can do is dial 646-929-2495. Tell me what riles you up about this. Or, even better yet, you can come to Press One for Democracy Monday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we'll pick up this conversation with Marianne Castiglia sitting in for Dan Aronson while he's in Australia, and her guest, Charlotte Hughes-Cloe, and they'll be having an in-depth interview about election, voter registration, voter turnout, and voter, what's the word, you know, the care and feeding of voters. In other words, when you show up, should you be in line for 8 hours? Is there something wrong, or what can we do about that? And I'll be there with them, and I'm, of course, going to put in my my 2 cents for mail-in voting. It meets all the criteria to prevent voter fraud. We have over 60% turnout every time, which is amazing, especially given that that way beats the national average. Fewer than 50% of eligible voters are usually there. And that will be right here on Block Talk Radio on Monday night. So here's my NPR reminder. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowd-funded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. To become a voting member or to donate, you can go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. Oh, and as I'm here, I see a hand come up. Thank you, guys. All right, so first, another hand up. So I'm opening up the mic for area code 707. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Let us know who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Linda from Northern California.
Hi, Linda. Long time no hear.
Hi. I didn't hear what you said.
just welcome back.
Oh, okay. I got off. I missed the first few minutes of your show, or the first, actually, 17 minutes. And then I just got off because I wanted to look up a URL. And basically, it's just some things that I get in my email. And so I don't know if I'm repeating. Just take it with a grain of salt, please. But did you cover Rock the Vote?
I would love it if you would talk about Rock the Vote.
Okay, well, basically it was just to get a URL, but Rock the Vote is trying to get everybody to vote and facilitate whatever problems there might be in various states. I got to close this and open the other thing. Okay, so that is Rock the Vote, www.rockthevote.com. And there was this other one that I had opened up that was called, it's www.866ourvote.org. And that one, it looks like it's Election Protection Administration by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. So that one is also, I think, a good one because it's run for people who care about your rights about voting and things like that. So if you have any problems, you know, that might be a good source. So anyway, I just wanted to give those. And, you know, where I live is really small, so I'm going to be calling for a couple of people. And basically, you feel like what you are doing doesn't matter too much if you're in a really red kind of an area that's nobody really listens to much of anything else. But and it's a small area, so population-wise, we don't matter a whole lot for the whole state, you know, as far as totals and things like that. But I know every little drop counts, but, you know, I think that probably does stop some people from thinking that their vote matters.
Well, certainly, my experience in a small community is that the little things we vote on that affect us only sometimes make the biggest difference in my life. And so I think to think that, you know, voting for president is kind of sexy, kind of cool. You know, voting for governor, okay. But you know what? Voting for the land use plan made a bigger difference in my life, I swear, than most of that. And but tell me this, you're in rural Northern California. What are the voter laws there, the voter registration laws there? And is it any kind of a challenge to you?
The laws, I think this is the first election, so I'm not really familiar with it. But I thought we just got the same-day registration. I know it was an issue we were voting on, and I've kind of been out of it. But I'm pretty sure that we have the same-day registration now. It's in California, and we also have that top two system where the top two vote getters in a primary have a runoff, and so we have. It's not always party oriented, and unfortunately, that throws a lot of the smaller organizations to the wayside, you know, the Peace and Freedoms, the Green People, you know, the chances of them, their candidates getting, you know, in the top two is pretty small. So it kind of minimizes them. So we try and take them under our tent so that, you know, you got to keep people's interests.
Right.
Got to keep them there, you know. But the, you know, as far as we do the voter registration at the farmer's market. We do voter registration pretty much any kind of event. There's a table set up and we do voter registration. You know, and I don't know, that's pretty much it for us.
Well, I just looked at California while you were talking. I looked at California while we were talking, and it says here you can register up to 15 days before the election. So if that's a brand new law, it's not on their website yet. But I'm really taken, Linda, because you can click 10 different languages. And so when you come to the website, it gives you a choice of English and 9 other languages how to register to vote. The Spanish, Chinese, Hindi, Japanese, Khmer, I don't know what that says, Korean, Tagalog, Thai, and Vietnamese. I just think that's marvelous. I really do. It takes all of us, right? It takes all of us. And so it's 15 days. You can register online. Go ahead.
Well, it's a big state, and I've always voted, but I need to probably just double check too, like you were saying, and make sure my registration is still valid, because you never know.
That's true. You know,
when you talked about birth certificates and everything. I'm thinking, thank God it happened before 9/11 and the Patriot Act and everything, which we won't go into that. But anyway, the my in-laws, I went through a rather bad divorce, and my in-laws threw all my paperwork away. So that was I was in the military at before, not then, but at the before I was. So my son was born in another state. He was born in Florida, and I was born in New Jersey, and you know, it was like, okay. And then, you know, I got married in New Jersey, so I had to do the name change thing. So I had to prove that I was no longer Linda this, and now I'm Linda that, because my son asked me to keep the same last name. Because I would have dumped the married name. But anyway, so now I have to go. I had to go and I had to pay all this money and work long distance because I didn't have the money to go fly into these states to try and physically show up with documents and things. I don't know. I can't imagine. I probably wouldn't have been able to vote anymore because I don't know what they require anymore in this day and age since 9/11 to get a birth certificate again. You know, to prove that I am so and so.
Yes, yes. For those of us who can, money isn't an issue like that. I mean, my children have passports, and a passport, you know, buys you everything in terms of identification because you put that all together one time, right? And then you have it, and it seems to be more enduring than your driver's license and stuff like that. But unfortunately, it's not the answer. For all of us. And, I was just about to go. We had two callers with their hands up. I was just about to go to them, and I locked them both. So if you're listening, if you're streaming, come back. I was about to click to you. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right that it's all kinds of things happen so that you don't have a birth certificate. All kinds of things happen. Not the least of which your absent-minded mom loses it, which is what I did to one of my kids. And so it's actually no small deal. And if you haven't got established who you are as an adult, one thing to get for your kids, another to when you're doing it as an adult. And it is a tedious process. It is laborious because, you know, you're dealing with vital statistics departments at underfunded state organizations, right?
Right.
And so they're only geared up to do so much, and you're going to have to wade through that process, let alone produce documents. So thank you very much for calling in, as always, and I appreciate your input to our talk today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Anything more before I go?
No. No, that's good.
Excellent. Excellent. And thank you so much. So, short of my two callers that I just lost coming back, I think that we've come to the conclusion of our conversation today. I want to thank everybody for being here with Lynch & Bowden, and I will remind you that Blog Talk Radio shows occur three times a week for Coffee Party USA, Coffee Talk, Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Arrington. This week it will be part 2 of the voter conversation and with Mary Angel Siglia and her guest. And Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific, Here You Are, Lunch with Loudon. Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, Politics Done Right with Exerta Willing. My apologies to folks I didn't get to on the list, and I thank you very, very, very much for your participation today. Coffee Party on.